So on the show today, we welcome Martin Socha. He's a skilled trades advocate and VP of sales and marketing at SurePoint Group in Canada. Welcome, Martin, to the show.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me on the show.
So I have this burning question for you, okay? Mm-hmm. What would happen if we woke up tomorrow and all the skilled trades people disappeared? Your welders, your plumbers, your carpenters, your electricians, your fabricators. How screwed would we be?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I don't even know where to begin. The modern day life would come to a screeching halt as we know it, wouldn't it? My wife wouldn't get her cup of coffee in the morning too, so she'd be quite angry. That's where it'd start for me.
Everything that we take for granted would stop. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that. And I don't think people realize that. And I always make a joke about this because it's an extreme case. But yeah, with over 40% retiring over the next 5 or 10 years, and most of the skilled trades, and there's data out there that goes back and forth where the average median age is somewhere in the 40s, right? So they're mm-hmm. around our age-ish, that they're looking into retirement. And it's just not enough people coming into the trade. So it's not too far-fetched to think that, well, if I have an issue in my home and my plumbing is on the fritz, it might take 4 weeks for a plumber to show up. Or if my boiler goes and my heat doesn't work, it might take a few weeks for the boiler person or the boiler trade individual to come and to fix the issue on top of the prices being out of whack. What do you see in that? Do you see that? Do you agree with that? Or
Yeah, we definitely see it. And to go back to your first point here, you know, what would happen with all the trades professionals being gone? You did a video. It's actually the first video I ever saw of Andrew Brown. This is probably over a year ago right now. And you did that video. What would happen if all the trades professionals disappeared today, right? Poof, they're all gone. You know, your toilets wouldn't work. Your lights wouldn't turn on. You wouldn't have access to internet. No Monday night football. I think that's the one that really killed me because I'm a big football fan as well. But you're right. I mean, if all these people disappeared, modern day life would come to a screeching halt and we would be screwed. You know, and there is a massive shortage for skilled trades professionals. You know, you talk about the boiler not working. Winter's coming up. I live in Canada. It's a little bit colder up here. If your heater does go out in your home, we can't wait around 4 weeks for a technician to come by. So we will pay whatever it takes to get done. This is a massive crisis that we are seeing, you know, throughout North America. And I've been doing lots of statistics and lots of advocacy like you have. And Canada and the U.S., I mean, we have been seeing a trend downward for nearly 2 decades when it comes to the labor market. And we've seen shop classes removed. We've seen trade programs disappear. We've seen numbers in apprenticeships dwindling. And we are starting to see the biggest labor shortage I have ever experienced in my entire career. And it's only going to get worse with all the retirements that are coming up.
And you hit a good point here, because what is the reason behind, what is the reason behind that shortage? And there's obviously a few different reasons, but I want to touch upon shop class for a quick mm-hmm. moment, because I do feel that shop class, where did they go? They disappeared, and they disappeared especially here in the U.S. Yeah. And I remember back in high school, I don't remember a shop class. I don't remember a woodworking class. I don't even remember it being spoken about. But what I'm really interested in knowing about, since this new initiative in, I believe it's Ontario, Canada,
yeah,
for all grade 9 students, that they, in order for them to graduate, they need a credit by taking a shop class. On top of, you have the option, or apparently in the new year, in grade 11, that you can forgo your grade 12 classes and get into a trades program right away, but still get a diploma.
Correct. Yeah, it's starting in 2024. So it's 2024, every grade 9 student in Ontario will require at least one tech credit in order to graduate. And then you're right. I mean, if students actually do want to pursue a career in trades and they want to go down that path in grade 11, they can forego grade 12. They get their high school diploma still, and then they can get into the trades a little bit earlier, which is great. But that's one province. We've got a lot of provinces in Canada, and we do have a shortage from coast to coast. But it is a really good encouraging sign to see. And we are starting to not only talk about the problem, but we are starting to do different things to remedy the problem and improve it moving forward.
Yeah, and that's a bigger initiative than what I've seen here in in the U.S. It's spoken about that shop classes are missing, but it's not really pushed. It's just, you know, where did they go? And there's no real initiative, at least from our administration, from what I see, that there's no plan of putting those back in. But back in the day, and I can go back to like the 50s or 60s, that was a requirement. Like you had to take a shop class. And I remember watching, funny enough, I was watching a show with my kids, and it's called The Wonder Years. It's a U.S.
Fred Savage. Yeah. Great show.
Fred Savage.
Yeah.
Winnie Cooper. And Kevin was in a shop class, and my kids were watching it, and they were scratching their heads and wondering, why is he taking that class? Because they're not even, they're not, you know, they're a little bit younger, but it's still not in the curriculum. I can't say the word, but you know what I mean? At all. And it's foreign to them. And it's just,
you guys
it's
mind-boggling. Maybe you don't have the programs that we start to see in Ontario, but do you see any improvements from that? And shop class, even home ec, like I'm surprised how many people don't even know how to cook today. You know, it's nice. You can jump on your app. You can order Skip the Dish or DoorDash, whatever it is. But I'm flabbergasted by the amount of people that don't even know how to cook a basic meal. But they don't have to anymore because, you know, everything is accessible to them. And number two, I don't think it's really taught by people. The other thing with that is, and I'll go to cooking for quickly for a bit because I love cooking. Like we cook in our family. I'm the cook in the house and I love it. But I think this day and age, life is expensive too, right? You have mom, you have dad working. They're working full time to meet ends meet. And then they come home, you know, after working a full day, the kids come home. Who has time to cook? You know, so then they go the easy route. They get the takeout stuff or they buy ready to cook meals and that type of thing. And we are losing, you know, how to cook meals and how to cook healthy meals for our families too, which leads to a bunch of other problems later on in life when it comes to your health. So, but we've seen a disappearance on shop classes and home ec as well. And in Canada, Andrew, I'll tell you where I think it really started from, where we're actually starting to see a bit of a change. And I don't know if it's the same and if it's mirrored in the US, but what's happened in Canada over the last couple of years specifically, there's a massive housing crisis here right now. Okay. So just to give you some statistics, last year we have seen the biggest population growth in Canada since 1957. It was about 3%, you know, and we got about 38 million people in Canada. And that's the highest of all G7 countries when it comes to population growth. And so as we get all this immigration coming in, we do not have the housing to support it. And we are trying to make more housing affordable to everybody. So in Alberta, in my city, in Calgary, the average price of a home here and the average price, I guess, across Canada, we're probably that average, is about $675,000. In bigger cities, Toronto, the average house price is $1.1 million. The average house price in Vancouver is $1.2 million. And I'm not talking about a big mansion with a fancy pool or anything. Like this is a normal average mill house in those areas. And as we start to get more immigration coming into the country from various different areas, we don't nearly have enough houses right now in order to supply that demand. I read a stat from the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, and they forecast that we need an additional 3.5 million more homes by 2030 than the country is currently on track to build. Like, and I think there is over 100,000 vacancies in that construction sector right now. So it is causing a tremendous amount of stress. The vacancies continue to push up the building costs and they impede production, so we can't get stuff done. And the housing pricing in Canada is becoming very unaffordable for most Canadians. And also with the interest rates going up, it is wild. So I'm glad to see our government starting to do certain things. You know, we're putting back the shop classes into high schools. We're advocating a lot more for it, but we definitely have a long ways to go. Do you see that in the U.S.? Is that an issue that you see down there when it comes to a housing crisis and affordability?
Affordability has always been an issue here. And obviously, there's certain pockets of the U.S. And just like in Canada, it's a little bit more expensive. What we see here is that the mortgage rates are through the roof. So it's very expensive to own a home along with everything else. So everything is more expensive. Food is more expensive. Housing is more expensive. College is more expensive. And your mortgage payment is now almost double from where the rates were. So it's created this bubble where there's people that can afford it and there's people that can't afford it. And that bubble of the people that can't afford it is a bigger percentage versus the people that can. And you talk about on not being able to afford things. You know, we sat down with a financial planner a few years ago and talking about college and what it would cost for 4 years. And my kids are younger, but still they have a few years. And it was just, my mouth dropped. And I was just like, unbelievable compared to when I went to school years back. Yeah. Obviously, there's a big difference in time frame there. And I start to rethink things about the education for my kids. And everybody's different. I don't knock college for one bit because I went for a four-year degree. But I came out more confused than when I was in school, because I was bouncing around to major to major. And it's making us rethink things about the future of our kids. And I want to stand behind my kids, you know, whether they go a trades route, or if they go into college, or if they go into a different direction. You always want to support your family and your kids, but giving them the right options. But like going back to your original question, everything has gotten more expensive. And I just wanted to talk about the cooking aspect. Actually, in our family, my wife is the cooker. I know my place. I stay out of the kitchen, but my daughter cooks with my wife and she takes a cooking class. So I think also that has a part of what's happening in your household, especially on top of what's spoken about in your household. So the trades or college, it's interesting what happens and what's spoken about really imprints of your, not your DNA, but just like what your thoughts are about what you want to be or your career. It's so important to have an open conversation, be open with your kids and have that tough conversation.
I agree. I think that's the number one responsibility as a parent, right? To instill good values, show your children the way to a certain aspect, allow them to be themselves. Don't force them into, you know, different types of career paths or sports and that types of things, but give them as many options as possible and allow them to follow their hearts and dreams too. But you're right. I mean, from a schooling standpoint too, and I've done the statistics in Canada, it's cheaper here than it is in the US. But even in Canada, the average four-year degree right now is over $50,000. If you include residence with that, you know, it's $100,000. And then if you took out student loans, you're not paying $100,000 back. You're going to be paying at least $200,000 back. And it's going to take you a very long time in order to pay all that back because life is expensive. So you'll make your minimum payments and so on and so on. Maybe your parents will pay for it, but that's difficult as well with the rising cost of everything. I've also noticed here, get this stat, the average age for an apprentice in Alberta right now is 27 years old. What does that mean, Andrew? That means a lot of those people that have become apprentices right now, they did go to university. You know, they did take on the student debts. They did get a degree, or maybe they didn't get a degree. They couldn't find a job that they were happy with, or they couldn't find a job that paid them well after that degree. And then maybe they were tinkering around their garages and they're like, hey, I really like working with my hands. Maybe I should get into the trades, but they were never exposed to that early on. And now at 27, 9 years after high school, saddled with a bunch of debt, now they're getting into an apprenticeship program. So how much time could be saved if we do give them those options early on? I read another stat, and I love stats, so I'm going to be spitting out lots of stats here today. But Stats Canada released a stat last year, and they said 71% of guidance counselors don't inform or encourage students to pursue a career in skilled trades. 71%. Even if the kid is actively asking about it, they go, no, you should go to university. We have parents that are going, I worked hard with my hands, so you don't have to. We glorify this one single narrative in life that you should go to university. And I've even heard a lot of parents saying, I don't care what they do as long as they get a degree. So it's not even not allowing them to pursue their dreams, but you're really setting your kids up at a deficit right now. If they go to university, if they take something that they're not interested in or something that's not going to benefit them, but then they have to tackle on all the student debt and then they put all this time into it. And they did. They actually don't get out any further ahead than when they got in. So I love what you're saying. Expose your children to all these different options in a household. That's your number one, obligation as a parent. And then how do we get out to our communities and start talking to high schools and other parents and, you know, lots of the advocacy that you do online through social media, which is wonderful.
I have friends who complain about the job all the time. Mm-hmm. Or there are people that don't go into what they studied for. So like you said, you put all this time, effort, went to law school or was going to go pre-med and wasn't for me. So you put all this time and effort. Now you're in your 30s mm-hmm. and you really don't have a full career path yet. And then that's just kind of in limbo. Mm-hmm. I do think the messaging portion, especially when you're 16, 17, you're thinking about college, you're thinking about a loan, and a lot of people are strapped with a lot of debt. And mm-hmm. like you said, that follows you when you come out of school. If your family can't pay your way, and most people are in that boat, how long is that going to take you to pay back? On top of, you take out a mortgage and then you just stack on debt, you just never get out of that vicious cycle. And I don't think that education, especially the financial education, is not there unless you really had that, like somebody taught you that, like your father sat you down and your mother sat you down. I know it, when I grew up, it was there, but it wasn't there. It was more so that I kind of figured it out myself. I probably would have got further ahead if I was shown the way. And what I'm getting at is mentorship.
Yeah.
Of speaking to somebody, not necessarily, obviously, you could have your mentor could be your mother, your father, but like outside of your household, people that you can speak to about what it's like to be in, let's say, a skilled trade, a plumber or a welder, if you're going in the trade route, is to align yourself with that individual so they can give you a path of success, assuming that individual is willing to help you, and they should pay it forward because if they were once new.
Yeah.
At some point that they should be open to that. So I do feel that aligning yourself with somebody who has been there and done that, especially who's successful, can give you all the steps, or at least most of the steps, of how to get to where you need to get to, so you don't fall into the trap that they did.
No, well said. I know you did the pay it forward comment to one of my posts yesterday when I was talking about mentorship. And I couldn't agree with you more. You know, there's a great saying that one of my friends, Greg Epp, uses. He says, be the ripple, be the stone. So we create these ripples, right, around us. And if we do a good deed, hopefully somebody else will do a good deed as well. But becoming a mentor, I think, is one of the most important thing for people in any profession, but really, really in the skilled trades. And one thing that I kind of get tired of hearing, and I'm sure you hear about this yourself, is we have this worn out narrative that the younger generation is lazy, they're entitled, they're distracted, and all they want to be is influencers. And I know plenty of people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s that could fall in that same category. And I don't think age defines laziness or distraction. There's always going to be generational differences. You know, we're always going to say it was better back in my day, and there's a sense of nostalgia that comes along with it. And today's youth did grow up in a completely different environment than we did. But they didn't come into this world inherently lazy or distracted. They were shaped by the world that we created for them. So ultimately, the responsibility falls squarely on our shoulders to keep them engaged and motivated. And instead of using that tired old rhetoric, let's come together and figure out ways to inspire and uplift the young minds to get into the trades or other professions. And let's be the mentors that we wanted others to be for us when we were growing up. I think that's something that's not talked about enough. You know, it's easy to label a generation, but that's lazy in itself as well. You know, it's harder to go out to the schools. It's harder to put together cool programs that use AI and a bunch of other things to really engage that next generation. And that's really what we need to do. You know, that's our responsibility.
Yeah, I do think there's a misconception about the younger generation, the millennials. You know, they're looking for different things, work-life balance. Mm-hmm. Look, it's not just, yes, wages are up there, but they're also looking to align themselves with a company's core values. You know, they're looking for recognition, right? They're looking for somewhere to grow. And the older generation, or my generation, is going to always look at the younger generation and point fingers. How do you do it that way? And I joke around in my son, there's something called TikTok hair. And the way they wear their hair, it's like a really poofy way. And my generation points, but what? I don't get that. Just like an older generation looked at us and said, why do they do what they do? So every generation will always point fingers at the younger generation, say they didn't work hard as I did. But you need to find a way to retain workers, and especially the younger workers that are coming through. They want something different. It doesn't work the way it once did. And you need to change with the times or you die. And that's what happens with a company.
Yeah, you're so true. You'll go the way of the dodo bird. And I think what you said about the generational stuff, it is true. That's never going to change. It's like the rite of passage, right? When you're a younger generation, it's the rite of passage for you to be, you know, criticized by the generation in front of you. We did things better. We worked harder. You know, I walked uphill in the snow both ways, you know, to school and back to home. But I'll tell you what, I don't remember a lot about the people that criticized me and looked down upon me and said my generation didn't work really hard. I didn't really build relationships with any of those people. I remember my mentors and my teachers and people when I first got into this industry that took me under their wing, that talked to me like I was an old friend, that showed me the way, that talked about, you know, how I could avoid certain pitfalls, how I could overcome things. They asked me really thought-provoking questions that would access my critical thinking so I'd be able to learn things in a different way. But most importantly, they became my friends. And those are the people that I really learned from. So when I look at it right now and I hear people of our generation saying those critical things of the younger generation, I always stop them and I say, no. I said, you need to engage them. You have to be better. You have to put the responsibility on your shoulders. And it's up to us to help them. That's the biggest thing. And industry does have to change. You know, industry changes in every single generation. The next generation, they do value work-life balance more. You know, maybe they didn't see their moms or their dads because they were traveling to site, and maybe they're working 5 or 6 or 7 days out of the week. Maybe they missed Christmas holidays. Maybe they want to spend some more time with their family and friends. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. That's really good. We also live in a more inclusive environment right now. We live in a much safer environment today than we did when we were growing up. All the safety standards at job sites are much higher as well. So industry is changing, and I think it's going to change in a really good way. And you're right. The companies that focus on culture and they give a sense of meaning and purpose to the younger generation, those are the ones that are going to attract. And those are the ones that are going to retain. So I think that's a really, really good point, but the responsibility falls on us.
I agree. And also, you know, companies need to share to get people in the trades, the success stories. That's mm-hmm. a huge piece of this, that you need to show what it looks like for someone to be successful in a certain area or a certain trade. Because it's hard when you're, especially when you're young and you're looking at different things to do. Well, how long is that going to take me to get there? And it's funny what people, what kids assume, and they say, some want to take a shortcut. You know, maybe I can be a YouTube star. I can make AdSense on YouTube or get picked up by this large brand because I have a big TikTok following. Well, that's an easier route. Then it's going to take me 5 years, yeah. 4 or 5 years, you know, through some type of apprenticeship. And, you know, and they're looking, some of them are looking for the easy way out, but hard work, whatever you do, you need to put the time and effort into it because you're going to half-ass it. Of course, you're not going to get to where you need to get to. And I want to bring back to your point about the apprenticeship. You said it was 27 was the average age.
27 is the average age. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I have a family member who actually was in a corporate environment. He worked for a big supermarket chain here. And now he's in his early to, I would say, mid 30s. And now he's making a shift to be an electrician. Mm-hmm. He's come from the corporate world.
Yeah.
And he's taken his skills in the corporate world, and now he wants to be an electrician. Yes, it's further down. A lot of people obviously start when they're younger. It's a little bit easier because maybe you don't have a family or you don't have responsibilities. And yeah, it's a little bit different in his situation. But between what he's seen, what I've done, and what he wants his future to be, he yeah. feels that being an electrician, especially where it's going with electrification and EVs and everything, that is the place to be. And more power to him. It's going to take a little bit of time to ramp up, go to school and do what he needs to do. But I have tried to help him by giving him other people in the trades the option to speak with people who've been in the trades for a few years and be sort of a mentor. So I've tried to help him out.
Yeah, that's great.
Throughout this process. But it's great to see that, you know, especially someone older getting into the trades.
It's never too old. You're never too old to learn. You're never too old to learn a new skill or do something different in life. It's only too late, you know, when we get buried eventually. That's when it's too late. But it's never too late to make a change. We have a similar story with one of my favorite people that I work with at SharePoint Group. So he was an accountant late into his 20s. And then he's like, I do not like accounting. And then he became friends with our CEO, Trevor Muir, who you met with in New York when we were down there in the springtime. And so him and Trev became buddies, and he's like, hey, if you don't like doing this desk job, why don't you try, you know, coming on board and, you know, you can see if you want to become an electrician. Well, he came on board, he became an electrician. He did that. He really, really loved it. He worked in our packaging group where we do big buildings for power generation and distribution. And then after a while, he's like, well, I don't really want to work on the tools anymore because he had a bum knee. Now he's getting into his 30s, right? And he's like, what else can I do around here? He moved into our estimating department. So now he was working on all the different estimates, but he was using his technical knowledge and his accounting knowledge, you know, together to create good estimates for our clients. And then most recently, he moved over into project controls, where now he takes his entire accounting background. He takes his technical background as being an electrician right now. He's been with us, you know, for 7 years. So he knows the culture, he knows the people, he knows our clients, but everything kind of came together in a role that we critically required as well. So with the story with your family member, you know, you don't lose that corporate stuff because just because you start on the tools, you don't end on the tools. You can shift to estimating after, you can shift to project management, you can move over to sales and marketing, you can move over into, you know, management or running your own company. And I mean, the opportunities are abundant for anybody getting into this space right now. It is wild. So it's never too late. It's a good message.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And you need to walk in those shoes. So that individual brings his experience of all the things that he's done. And now look where he's gone. So I always say climb the ladder of success. You need to be a CEO of a construction company. You can't just walk into that role. You need to have been out in the field or in a particular trade or done estimating and done project management, like done other things on the job site. So working your way up in that stepping stone, you can't just, you can't just, you know, be CEO of XYZ company or even go off on your own yet. You need to have that real world experience so you can understand, and especially the field workers will respect you because you've been there and done that. Because if you haven't, it's hard to sort of relate because you've never done that before. You never got your, never put your hands on it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You look at our company, we've got 450 employees throughout Western Canada. We've got 10 locations. Everybody outside of our finance department started on the tools. You know, our CEO started as an instrument tech. Our COO, our VP of operations started out as an electrician. Anybody that we have on our team started out as a tradesperson first, and then they walked up that corporate ladder, which is a really incredible success story. So, but it's important to share those stories, like you said. Like if people don't know, you know, they might have this misconception that, hey, when I work in the trades, I'm going to be stuck doing this backbreaking work for the rest of my life and there's no other opportunity to advance. The truth of the matter is there's tons of opportunity to advance if you're willing to put the work in. And the shortcuts in life, I know my grandpa always used the saying, there's no elevators in life, there's only stairs, right? You got to work to get there. And no different than the TikTok stuff. I like to talk about that because the person on TikTok that has 1.2 million followers, they probably put in a lot of time and effort to get there. You know, there was a plan. There was some consistency. You know what it's like being an influencer online and how long it takes for you to get that growth. And you do videos every single day, which I absolutely admire and I love. I look forward to seeing your videos every single morning. But I know how much time and effort you put into that. And so the people that are on the TikTok, even doing the hair and all those things, I mean, those, the ones that are really successful, they're working hard at it, right? So it's not easy.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not easy. And you have to show up every single day. I did a post today about being a content creator. It's not easy. And to be honest with you, it was really difficult. I quit a couple of times before, and then I just made a commitment and had a strategy and set things in place so I didn't burn out. And you have to put the time, effort, and you have to keep testing and trying. So I'm a big believer in that. And a lot of those, look at Mr. Beast on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he started somewhere, but it took him a long time to get there. It didn't happen overnight.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate everything that you've done in this space, Andrew. You know, you have inspired me over a year ago when I saw that first video. It made me go, hey, like, what am I doing in this space? Like, how can I help? And that's where those positive ripples, you know, kind of go. And you never know how far and wide those ripples influence people. And then after I saw your video last year, you and I kind of connected online. And then I started doing some videos too. Well, I know some of the videos that I've done have inspired some other people along the way as well. And then they have inspired other people and they have inspired other people. So this is far reaching right now, which is incredible. But I really, really, really want to thank you for putting the fire in my belly. I mean, you are inspiration for me and continue to be every single day. And you asked me, I think you sent out a post last year and said, who's with me? Right? I think it was like, who's with me into this thing? And I said, heck yeah, I'm with this guy. So I'm going to make a commitment. I'm going to tell you that I'm with you and I'm going to contribute to this problem and I'm going to try to come up with a solution. So ever since that day, as soon as I made a promise, man, I'm there right there with you. And I will help advocate all the way and I will cheer you on your journey and I will help anybody else that wants to participate on this ride because I think it's a much needed ride. It's a fun ride and we can do a lot of good with it.
And I appreciate that. And you need inspirational people around you to keep you going, right? There is a fire in the belly. And for me, it's obviously a bigger mission. And back in the days when I was helping out 9/11 and helping and working side by side with tradespeople 22 years ago when the buildings fell. So for me, that was my sort of my inspiration. And that just kept me going. But if I can inspire others, just like I've inspired you, and you've inspired others, it just keeps amplifying and amplifying. That's why you just need to keep showing up and showing up. And you don't just, you know, post one day and then post a week later. It's a commitment. It's just like brushing your teeth or getting up and getting dressed. It just becomes a ritual, and it just becomes, that's what you do. And that's how you succeed, I feel. So I have a question about what you're seeing in Canada from the side from women in the trades. On our end, I believe the statistic is 4 or 5% of women. And I've made these videos where if you want to solve the skilled trades deficit, then we need to bring in more women into the trades. But obviously there's a lot of different aspects of that where women need to feel supported and women need to feel that there's the wages are similar and they feel protected and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
What are you seeing on your end from in Canada for women in the trades?
Yeah, we are seeing the similar numbers. I'd say 4 to 5% would be optimistic. I think when it comes to, you know, electricians and millwrights and mechanics, you know, a lot of the trades that we employ, I'd say the national average would probably be around 1 to 2%, maybe. Instrumentation is a funny one, actually, because I looked up the stat and it's about 10% of instrument techs are women, which is amazing to see, which is great. Some of the best trades people that I know are women, and they work within our organization, and they're absolutely incredible. But we do have to carve out better pathways for women to get into the trades. We have to reverse some of the misconceptions, and we have to create a really inclusive workplace. So, you know, they feel important, they feel protected. If, you know, if they get treated a certain way or if something is said to them, then somebody's held accountable for that. So that's on us. We team up with a really incredible organization in Alberta right now. It's called Women Building Futures. And I love this organization because they help women from a lot of other facets in life. Okay. And maybe a lot of them are single mothers and they haven't had an opportunity to maybe find a really good career for themselves. And then they apply at Women Building Futures. If they need childcare or if they need some help with their rent and if they need, you know, anything else, then that organization will help them while they're going through some kind of a trades program. So we've participated in a lot of different events with Women Building Futures. We've brought on a few people into our organization as well. We have a lot of work that we need to continue to do, but organizations like that are starting to make an impact. And then it's up to industry right now to help organizations continue to, you know, lead the way. So there's quite a bit of stuff that needs to be done there, but I'm thinking we're making progress in the right direction. Oops, I might have lost you. Andrew, can you hear me?
You're there. Yep, you're there.
Oh, I think my internet or something dropped out. I can't see it right now. Can you see me still?
Yeah, you're coming a little bit pixelated, but I can hear you.
Okay. Let me just see here. You know what? They're doing construction in my area. I wonder if they did anything with the internet lines today.
You're still coming in.
Okay. I can hear you.
Yeah, you're still coming in. It might not be crystal clear, okay. But you're still coming in.
Okay. But yeah, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I see inspirational women out there like Jamie McMillan up in Canada, and she's an iron worker, and what she's doing, I mean, it's so inspiring. I mean, she's always out speaking at a school or some type of event, and she's showing kids that it's okay to work with your hands. I see Barbie the welder and what she does out there, and Rhea, and like just a lot of different people or a lot of different women in the trades. And it's inspiring that it is possible for women to succeed in the trades. So it's great to, you know, for them to put out those videos and it'd be social proof of what can be accomplished in the trades. But I still think we have a long way to go and we have a lot of work to do for women to feel supported out there.
Yeah. psychological safety, right? We talked about this yesterday in one of your posts. We do have to have a psychologically safe environment to welcome women into these as well. Also for minorities and immigrants coming into Canada and the US. I mean, when we look at the demographics for skilled trades professionals, they're highly dominated by, you know, males, white males specifically. And we need to create better access for, you know, all different types of ethnicities coming into the trades. So I think that's vitally important.
I agree.
And I like, so and I like seeing women like the Barbie the Welder. I followed her because I saw one of your posts. Jamie's absolutely incredible. And hopefully, you know, they do such a great job getting out on social media. I know Jamie does a circuit and she does a lot of different presentations and she goes and does a bunch of different seminars and goes to schools. But by doing that, you know, other women see what they're doing and they're inspired by it. And then we have to remove some of the some of the terminology that we use as a society, right? So when we see a young girl and they're mechanically inclined and, you know, instead of playing with Barbies and they like playing with tools and whether they like playing sports, what do we call them? A tomboy, right? Why would we call them a tomboy to begin with, right? Why wouldn't you just say, hey, this little girl here, she's very mechanically inclined and she's great at baseball. You know, but why does the tomboy thing come in there? So it's still like this negative stigma that you got to kind of reverse. And I think it's inspirational, you know, watching some of the women that you mentioned. It's great. We need more of them.
I agree. And that tomboy, it's funny. My son plays flag football and there's two girls who play flag football. And it's like, but they're really good.
Yeah.
They are really good. So, you know, you need to support women and make it feel comfortable, especially going into the trades. I wanted to read you a quick quote on something. Yeah. It's something that you had said in one of your posts, and I just want to read it sort of verbatim here. And you said, when you take care of yourself first, you are better equipped to support your family. And when your family is taken care of, you can focus on making a positive impact on your community. And you have a website called Better Human. And I wanted to touch upon that, if that's okay, about what you're doing on that end, because it's really inspirational. And I want really people to hear about that and what you're doing.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. Well, as you can see, I'm wearing this hat. You know, this has been an anchor for me over the years. And what really started out as a self-help practice for myself years ago, developed into a bit of a passion project. So life is all about prioritizing three pillars, you know, yourself, your family and community in that order. So as you said, you know, when you take care of yourself, you're better equipped to take care of your family. And if your family's taken care of, then you can take care of your community. So no different, like, you know, when you watch those airplane safety things, when the airplane oxygen mask pops out, whose mask do you have to put on first? You put on your own mask first, and then you put it on the people beside you. So for myself, you know, I grew up with an immigrant family that struggled a lot when we were growing up. Over the years, later on in my life, I became a workaholic. I had some bad, you know, habits that came along with being a workaholic. I ended up in the hospital when I was 37 years old, which was one of the best experiences, you know, that ever happened to me. And it was a wake-up call. And it was such a big wake-up call that it really, really transformed my life. And it made me start looking at things a little bit of a different way. And after that, you know, COVID was approaching. You know, my wife was extremely sick at the time. And we were giving birth to our son, who had a heart condition. And we were going back and forth, you know, with a bunch of different medical experts. We had to go to the Stollery when he was born, so he had to have a little bit of an operation. COVID was breaking out all over the place. This was in 2020. And our company was on the verge of bankruptcy. And I looked at myself in the mirror one day and I'm like, okay, like, and I had some bad habits, so I'll admit to that. I was probably drinking too much. I wasn't working out. I wasn't eating right. I was just surviving, right? Caught in the middle of a storm. And the word self-family community came to me, and I made a hat. I made a hat. And I said, every day, I'm going to put on this hat, right? So that was over 3 years ago. Every day I put on this hat to meetings downtown Calgary, on all my videos, on every single picture, I wear this hat every day. But this hat to me, Andrew, became a uniform, right? So when I put this hat on, I live these values. And I make sure that I do something for myself every single day. And then I make sure that I do something for my family. And if I have anything less left in the reservoir, then I try to get out and I try to be a positive impact into my community as well. And I got into stoicism, reading lots of different books over the years. I read a book by Ryan Holiday, who's a wonderful author, called The Obstacle is the Way. And, you know, I started reading about ancient Stoics like Marcus Aurelius and Seneca. And the main principles of Stoicism really, really hit me. And there was a quote by Marcus Aurelius, and it said, be like the cliff against the waves which they continually break, but it stands firm with the fury of the water around it, right? So the waves were the motions. And I felt like I was a rubber raft for a lot of the part. You know, I was being bullied by the waves, and the motions in life were taking me up and down. And that quote really resonated with me, that I can't control everything around me in life. I just have to be like that rock. I have to accept things. I have to ignore things that I can't control. I have to do the right thing. I have to stand tall. And most importantly, I have to stand calm. And over the years, you know, I've done a lot of messaging on this. And the passion project and the hat, you know, people used to start to ask me about the hat. Hey, where'd you get that hat? Where can I get one? I started printing them off, and I had them in my garage, and I started handing them out for free. I probably handed out more hats for free than I actually sold to people. And then one day, buddy of mine's like, why don't you just put together a website? Like, this would be way easier for you. And so this summer, I put together a website with some of the messaging behind it. And my hope is not to sell a million hats, but, you know, if anybody needs a hat, if it helps them like it helps me every single day, then I hope it really does. Because at the end of the day, we're all in this thing together, and we have to help each other. So it's really helped me, and I know it's helped a lot of other people along the way, and that's what life's all about.
I love hearing about your journey. And when we had met in New York City, because obviously we were talking on LinkedIn, it's interesting when you're going back and forth on someone on LinkedIn or on social media, you don't necessarily, when you meet in person, sometimes it's different.
Yeah.
And it's not really the same person, but when I met you and Trevor, your CEO, SharePoint, it was more than that. You were more than what you perceived online and by being in person. And I remember you telling me that story about being in the hospital. It was like a powerful story, how it changed everything for you and what you believe in. And being around you and people like you is so inspirational. It really is. And it's no BS there. You're just like an all-around good person with good values. And you're looking out for people. You're a skilled trades advocate, and you're just good people. I just call that good people. And you are who you are. And I just, it's as I am inspiration to you, you are an inspiration to me. So I'm glad that we got together and got to meet each other in person. To me, that was special.
Me too, brother. That was a really great day, and thanks for that. I really do appreciate it. That means a lot to me. And you're the same way too. Like, meeting you in person, no different. Yeah, definitely. It was even better in person.
Yeah, likewise. If somebody wants to get in touch with you on social media, or which platforms are you on for people that are listening?
Right now, mostly on for skilled trade stuff, mostly on LinkedIn, right? And then they can access my email and my phone number, and also go through our website as well. So if there's anybody that's interested in talking more, collaborating on certain things, if there's any events, you know, in the areas that we live in and serve that people want to get a hold of, me and maybe I can contribute and help out, or if they need somebody to talk to about getting into the trades. The one other thing too, Andrew, here's a really good one. I wanted to make sure that I touched on this. because we have what's called the Registered Apprenticeship Program within Alberta. I think you and I have talked about this before, but it's a really, really cool program. And we have a lot of RAP students within our organization. And so what a RAP student is, they said, if you're in high school and if you're interested in getting into the trades, you go and you register for the RAP program. It's with a company called Careers. And then they find a company that, you know, supports the trade that you're interested in. Then you meet with the company, you meet with the school, and your parents come in there as well. And then you figure out a schedule that's flexible for everybody. Then you start your apprenticeship journey over at that company while you're going to high school, grade 10, 11, and 12, okay? You're getting paid minimum wage. Our people here are getting paid 18 bucks an hour. We've got 12 RAP students throughout our organization. Better than working at KFC like I did and Sunglass Hut and McDonald's and those types of places because you're actually learning something. And then you also get hours towards your first year of your apprenticeship and then credits towards your high school diploma. But what a great way to introduce people into the trades. So I go to a lot of different high schools and I talk to students about this. I'm like, get into the RAP program. Even if you want to go to post-secondary education, especially if you want to be an engineer. If you want to be an electrical engineer, try the RAP program and be an electrician. Or maybe be a mechanic or a millwright. Like, try these different things because they're transferable. And then they're going to make you a better engineer down the road. But if you want to get into the skilled trades, you are so far ahead of everybody else when you get out of high school. It's a wonderful program. I support it wholeheartedly. And then we do a lot of other events. There's one coming up here in Calgary put on by my friend Sally Morse. It's called Future in Trades and Technology. So this is on October 20th and October 21st. There's a bunch of keynote speakers. There's panel discussions. There's demonstrations. There's a women's workwear show. Sally has like a fashion company for women's PPE, which is awesome. She's going to be doing that. But now you get all these people in one event. So you can go, you can talk about trades. You can learn from other tradespeople. You could find the good, the bad, the all the different sides of the trades. I think it's a wonderful event and we need more to these types of events to expose people to the trades, right? So.
I love it, Martin. And I love the passion behind it because I could feel it that you're excited to get people in the trades. If you're not following Martin on LinkedIn, please do. Again, he's an inspiration overall. And he's just an overall good guy. So thank you, Martin, for being on the show. I appreciate it. This is another episode of The Lost Art of the Skilled Trades, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks, Andrew.